Our first scripture reading this morning from the first chapter of the letter to the Hebrews, beginning at the first verse. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many and various ways by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he created the worlds. He is the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being, and he sustains all things by his powerful word. When he had made purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high, having become as much superior to angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. Here ends the first scripture reading. Today we remember the birth of a baby. But there is more than that for us to celebrate today. Look, the Gospels give us essentially three views of the Christmas event. First, Matthew presents Jesus as the King of the Jews, the promised Messiah of Israel. Matthew traces Jesus' ancestry back to Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation. Then Luke takes a wider view. He places the birth of Jesus in the context of Roman emperors and royal governors. His genealogy of Jesus runs all the way back to Adam, the source of all humanity. As you know, Matthew and Luke are the sources of most of our Christmas pageants and carols, and gladly we hear the messages they bring. But today, our scripture comes from the first chapter of John. And John sets Jesus in still a wider context. Nothing less than the cosmos itself is a canvas broad enough to do justice to the vision that the fourth gospel lays out. Matthew and Luke give us shepherds and wise men, but not until the Hubble Space Telescope began to send us magnificent vistas of galaxies, pictures of interstellar dust clouds like rainbows. Only now do we have visual images adequate to suit the scope of John's vision for the context of Christmas. The sermon this morning and the second scripture are sort of scrambled together. And even so, the sermon's going to be much shorter than usual. That's my Christmas present to you. And we're going to make a slight change in our reading of John 1, 1 through 14. That familiar passage, as you know, usually begins, "In the beginning was the Word." But I'm going to change the translation today. I'm not changing the Bible, you understand. I'm just making an alternative translation. You already know that this document was written in Greek, so any English rendering of it is already a translation. And the Greek word, the Greek noun that we call word, has no precise English equivalent. Oh, the dictionary will tell you that the Greek logos equals the English word, and that's good enough for schoolbook use, perhaps. But when we look more deeply at that Greek noun logos, we discover that it has a long history, both in Greek philosophy and Hebrew theology. Logos is so much more than a sound we pronounce. Logos is an active, creative force. It brings life into being. It gives order and meaning to chaos. Logos expresses and reveals the intention of the divine creator of all. So we may properly translate the Greek logos in many ways, and we probably should, for otherwise we limit and restrict our own understanding of the powerful, far-reaching good news that the writer of the gospel is striving to express. We're talking about much more than the birth of a baby boy here. I've mentioned to you all before the spiritual writer Richard Rohr. This Franciscan priest is one of the most helpful contemporary writers I know. He suggests that we read the opening verses of John in this way, and this is our scripture. The first chapter of John's Gospel, beginning at the first verse. In the beginning was the blueprint, and the blueprint was with God, and the blueprint was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light that enlightens everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or of the will of the flesh, but of God. And the blueprint became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Here ends the reading from the scriptures. In the beginning, what beginning? Not just the birth of Jesus of Nazareth. The blueprint was active long before that. All things came into being through him, through the blueprint, says John. Without him, not anything came into being that is. To put it in modern languages, no Big Bang 14 billion years ago without the guidance and initiative of the blueprint. No development from basic atoms into living cells and then on into more complex life forms until we arrive at beings capable of responding, knowing and responding to their creator. Indeed, it is nothing else than God's blueprint that guides and drives evolution all the way to now. The unknown author of Letter to the Hebrews says the same thing in different words as he begins his message, which we just read. God has spoken to us by a Son, through whom he also created the worlds. This Son sustains all things by his powerful word. God's blueprint gives shape to the entire universe. The Hubble telescope pictures show us what giving shape to the universe means. God's blueprint expresses the intention, the purpose of God, the very design of God. God's blueprint is not just a set of directions to be followed, but it is an active, powerful force guiding God's purpose toward its universal completion. The birth of Jesus of Nazareth is important in the divine purpose, and it's proper for us to celebrate it today, but it isn't the beginning. Jesus is not a later footnote added to God's design for the cosmos. God's blueprint was there from the beginning, and it is the end toward which the whole cosmos is moving. In Jesus of Nazareth, God's blueprint became human flesh and lived among us. Read it again. The blueprint became flesh and lived among us. This is John's one-sentence Christmas story. The sentence could not have been written by a Greek philosopher or even a Jewish student of Hebrew wisdom. The philosopher and the wisdom teacher could say wonderful things about God's logos giving shape to the universe, could say wonderful things about God's wisdom active in creation, but only the Christian writer could say the blueprint became flesh and lived among us. This sentence is what is unique about Jesus and what sets the Christian faith apart from every other faith and philosophy. God's blueprint became flesh and lived among us. This is what we celebrate at Christmas. Rejoice at the birth of Jesus? Always. But I say more. Stretch your vision. Look beyond your individual concerns. Look even beyond the affairs of our whole human race. Go out tonight and look at the stars. They really do shine brighter at midwinter, at least in our part of the world. And you are not wrong if you say that the stars are shining to celebrate the coming of God's divine blueprint in human form. Isaac Watts was correct when he called on the forces of nature, fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains to repeat the sounding joy at this event. The angels who fill the pages of our Christmas carols remind us that this birth cannot be measured on the scale of human affairs. God's blueprint for the entire cosmos has come to live among us in human form. Let us rejoice. Merry Christmas.